On This Week in Enterprise Tech, Google gets a party barge, the patent war heats up, and packets never lie. It's Wyatt on the set.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Enterprise Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is TWiT, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 65, recorded November 4th, 2013. Application Performance Management. This episode of TWiT is brought to you by TechServe. TechServe assists U.S. businesses of all sizes with their technology needs, including Apple, Avid, Adobe, and HP solutions. Visit techserve.com/TWiT and receive a complimentary iPad deployment assessment. And by GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet with coworkers and clients from anywhere. Share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even present from an iPad. Try it free for 30 days, no credit card required to get started. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use promo code ENTERPRISE. And by RingCentral.com. We do everything in the cloud. That's why I love my cloud-based phone system by RingCentral. Zero startup costs and RingCentral is $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial and buy one desk phone and get a second phone free. Up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit RingCentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. Welcome to TWiT, This Week in Enterprise Tech. It's the show dedicated to the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and the geek who just wants to know how the world is connected. I'm your host, Father Robert Ballazare, the digital Jesuit, your guide to all things in the enterprise. And of course, I'm joined by a stellar cast, a panel of rogues, starting with my good friend, Mr. Brian Chi, the director of the Advanced Network Computing Laboratory in Honolulu, Hawaii. Brian, tell me how the geek in paradise is doing atop your secret volcano lair.
Actually, I'm doing great. I have recovered from my one-day trip to Calabasas. And no, I did not get shot at LAX, but I was standing at the top of Figueroa for a couple hours in the hot sun waiting for the California police to let us back into LAX. Lots of fun.
Yes, yes, indeed. And we're glad that you're home safe because, you know, well, we need you here. You know who else we need? We need Mr. Kurt Franklin from Enterprise Efficiency. Curtis, it's so good to see you. How are things going on the right coast?
Well, it is feeling awfully autumnal here in the Sunshine State, high in the lower 70s. So we know that autumn is truly upon us. No hurricanes, no tropical storms, just pleasant weather and lots of reasons for staying inside and talking to the TWiT Riot.
Speaking of lots of reasons for staying inside, our very first Enterprise Byte is just that. It's actually an update on a story we did last week where we were geeking out over the potential for a Google floating data center. Remember this whole idea of taking their containerized data centers packed with servers, dropping it on a barge and being able to move it from place to place to place. Curtis, Brian, and I really geeked out on the potential of such a project, but wah, wah. Actually, I should have had Jason cue up a sad trombone sound for that. It turns out that it's really just a party barge. That's right. Several outlets are now reporting that the Thank you. And that's my TD, folks. Jason Howell, ever ready, ever with the button. But they're reporting that the mysterious barges that have popped up on the West Coast and one up in the East Coast are actually showrooms. The first three floors are going to be dedicated to what they call an elegant showroom space, while the top floor will be filled with bars and lanais and other interesting places where people can just chill out. Now, in between acting as a showroom, it's going to be used as sort of a party barge for Google to be able to hold their large events on the East and the West Coast. And here's the big thing. It will actually be able to be disassembled, so you can pull the individual containers apart and then ship them around the world via barge, via rail, via truck. Now, let me start with you, Chibert. I don't want to spend too long on this, but it is a little bit of letdown that it's not a containerized data center. But at the same time, it is still kind of cool tech, is it not?
Yeah, well, you know, hey, at least they're recycling a ton of those containers. Because keep in mind, one of the really big problems for shipping companies, especially the guys at Long Beach, is that's an awful lot of real estate to dedicate to empty containers. So anything that uses up those containers is a great thing.
Yeah. Curtis, I don't want to spend too long on this, so I'm going to throw this over to you really quickly. What are your odds, oh odds maker, that this news story is actually a cover-up from the rumor story and that it actually still is a data center that we all hope it is?
Well, I think the chances of it being a data center are probably much smaller now. On the other hand, I wouldn't say that it makes a lot of sense as any kind of long-term sales showroom, if for no other reason than if you look at how many of these cities have their retail districts right down on the waterfront. The answer is not many, and the reason is that they're hard to get to. I think that what you may well see is a test platform for the notion of containerized stuff.
Yes.
Some of it could be data centers. Some of it could be showrooms. Some of it could be corporate event stations. But the notion of using these ubiquitous, awfully inexpensive containerized shipping vessels for many, many different things fits in with the Google white box philosophy. And it really is a solid example for lots of people doing enterprise stuff in a bunch of different areas.
Right. I actually like that. I think that's the core concept to draw out of the story. And I'm not going to talk about it again until we actually have some hard facts. So the rumor was fun, but I'm getting a little sick of it. But the core idea is this idea of containerizing stuff, whatever it is, a data center, a showroom, using the same technology that has brought the consumer culture around the world to be able to put your thing in and have it ready to go in just a moment's notice, being able to ship it via rail, via truck, via barge, get it to your destination and have it up and running in what would otherwise be an unprecedented short period of time. Now, let's move on to a story that is not a rumor, and that is that Microsoft and Apple have now become the class of patent trolls. Again, wait, can I get a sad trombone on this one too? Because, yeah, well, maybe. Because, yeah, I think this really does. Yeah. Yeah, so you've probably heard about this story, and it does have some serious ramifications for anyone who is in the enterprise IT market if you're actually developing products. Now, Rockstar Consortium is suing Google, Samsung, HTC, Asus Tech, and LG, among others. Now, in case you don't know, Rockstar was founded in 2011 by five different companies, Apple, Microsoft, BlackBerry, Sony, and Ericsson, back when they won a bidding war with Intel and Google for the defunct Nortel Networks patent portfolio. They paid $4.5 billion. Rockstar is now employing former Nortel employees to look through the current crop of products, be it phones, switches, whatever it is, to reverse engineer them and see if there's anything actionable, something that they can sue over. I got to tell you, I understand that they paid a lot of money for these patents. I understand that they want to get a little bit of investment back. But, Chibert, let me open it up with you. How do you feel about a company buying what are essentially weaponized patents with the sole purpose of suing other companies with them?
Man, you know, why? I mean, really, don't you have better things to do with, you know, just short of $5 billion, I could think of all kinds of good things to do. You know, guys, take a page from Bill Gates, who's using his billions to go and make the world a better place. This whole thing about just trying to, you know, do bad things to other people. Come on, really?
Yeah. Well, the thing that really strikes me about this, that makes it's particularly sickening, is if you look at the companies that make up Rockstar Consortium, the companies that they can distance themselves because they say, well, we're not suing them. Rockstar Consortium is suing them on our behalf. We just gave Rockstar the patent, and then they went after people who were violating it. But in essence, they're going after companies that could pose a threat to their core businesses. Apple, Microsoft, Sony. All of those companies have something to lose when with Android taking up such a large chunk of the marketplace. Curtis, let me throw this over to you. We've discussed the chilling effect of lawsuits like this before, of these non-practicing entities, of these companies that buy patents not intending to use them to create anything, but solely for filing lawsuits. Is this a viable business model?
We have seen some people make it a viable business model. Certainly Nathan Mervold and his company has been able to prosper. Other companies haven't been able to do it. It depends on exactly what they choose and exactly how they do it. You know, we really have seen a huge change. I remember back in the early to mid-1980s, IBM saying, with reasonable justification, that they were confident that it was impossible to build a multipurpose digital computer without infringing their patents. What kept them from shutting down the industry in its infancy? Two things. One was the notion that at that time, patents were something that you traded with other companies. You extracted some value for their use, but you did allow their use. That was understood. Everyone was using everyone else's patents and paying for the privilege. The other thing, and I think this is most important, IBM was still at that company a company that was run by engineers. It was run by people who had come up through an engineering discipline. Even if they weren't themselves academic engineers or practicing engineers, that was the ethos. Now you see more and more companies run by people who have JD after their name. And when you've come through the legal system, when you've come up through law school, you're going to use the tools you have been taught. For a lawyer, that tool lies in the courtroom. And that's what we're seeing today, the result of having far too many, in my opinion, executives who are former attorneys rather than being former engineers.
All right. Chiebert, I want to explore this idea of the idea of a consortium. So in the past, the reason why you would create a patent portfolio was it was really a defensive matter. And that's why you would patent things that really shouldn't be patented. You just wanted a big group of patents in your war chest so that if someone came after you, you could go after them. And it was understood that you don't sue me, I don't sue you. We'll trade a couple of patents. Maybe there'll be a little bit of monetary exchange. But for the most part, it's mutually assured destruction. It seems to me as if this round of patent craziness really started with SEO, with the Santa Cruz group that sued Linux first, and then with Apple going after all the Android manufacturers. And now the cat's out of the bag. Companies are no longer sitting in a defensive posture. They're going offensive. This is probably the worst example of that because you have companies that have purchased these patents, handed them off to a third party and said, well, our hands are clean. We're not suing you, so you shouldn't sue us. And yet their consortium is suing you on their behalf. Tell me, I mean, what is the possible way to get out of this? Google has in the past tried a couple of different indemnification schemes where they say if you use our technology, we will defend you in court. But if company after company starts using this consortium idea to go after their competitors without getting their own hands dirty, it's really going to be all out war, right?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, there used to be a time when major corporations had licensing offices. You know, universities have them, so forth. A lot of these patents, you know, especially when they come out of universities, we're actually bound by the rules of the university to do our licensing through the university intellectual property offices, and then we'd license it out. I think one of the changes is universities aren't building as much of the new intellectual property as they used to. So now with intellectual property being designed and created by the corporations, they're getting very zealous about protecting it. I really and truly hope that we start getting back into the licensing model instead of the patent trolling and lawsuit model, because it sure is counterproductive. And it just occurs to me that as more and more of these patents get shared, we might see the consumers benefiting because there's better stuff coming out. But I personally think this whole thing is very, very counterproductive.
Right. Curtis, last word over to you. We have heard a little bit of rumbling that this is just the first round, that Rockstar is going after other large companies, possibly including Facebook. There are some technologies that Facebook uses in their data center that could be covered by Nortel patents. So let me put you back into your enterprise executive mindset and ask you, should enterprise executives be concerned about this? Should they be watching it closely? Because it seems as if Rockstar's not just going after those who create products. Rockstar wants to go after those who are offering services.
Well, I think what it means is that from an enterprise perspective, you have to ask questions of your providers. You know, now is the time, especially if you're in the early stages of putting together a five-year plan, to ask your potential providers, whether it be a product provider or a service provider, whether they feel they are vulnerable to this sort of action from Rockstar. If they are, then that certainly could make a difference in precisely how you work with them. Asking them, if it's found that you are infringing upon a patent, how will you deal with it? These are realistic, reasonable questions to ask. Now, I don't think this is the sort of organization that's or consortium that's going to end up going after the end users. That is a low-class, terroristic kind of action that that this group just is not likely to do. They will confine most of their action to the major manufacturers and possibly, in the case of Facebook, service providers. But it could have some implications for the users. Now's the time to have those conversations and make sure that the answers you get are reassuring to you as you think about adding these companies' products and services to your five-year plan.
To sue or not to sue, that is the question. And for the patent troll, the answer is, duh. Now, when we come back, we're going to be going into a deep dive all about application performance monitoring. If you're an IT person or if you use a network, so that's pretty much all of you. I mean, if you're watching us right now, yeah, that's going to concern you. You need to know about this because it's going to help you to figure out what's going wrong when things slow down. But before then, I want to take a moment to talk about our first sponsor. Now, we know that TWiET is all about the enterprise. Hey, it's in our name. And yet, we don't give enough time to Apple. We know that Apple has become a major player in the enterprise because of BYOD, bring your own device. People want to use the same devices at home in the workplace. That's why we're happy to welcome TechServe to the TWiET riot. As New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and technology provider, TechServe serves creative professionals at all levels, from individual customers to Fortune 100 companies. TechServe carries a full range of Apple products, from iPhones and iPads to iMacs, MacBooks, iPods, and accessories. TechServe also has a range of partnerships with top vendors to facilitate flexible, efficient, and creative solutions for all of your business needs. TechServe assists businesses of all sizes to deploy Apple, Avid, and Adobe solutions throughout the U.S., whether you're already committed to iPads or just getting started, from sales to support, process to practice, TechServe can help. Now, some amazing technology solutions are already being deployed on iPads. If you've been to the Delta terminals in LaGuardia, Toronto, or Minneapolis, and this is actually footage from my travels through those airports, you may have noticed nearly every seat in the terminal is equipped with an iPad. Travelers can now sit anywhere in the terminal and receive real-time flight updates on their iPad or use them to order food, play games, browse the internet, and check email all while they're waiting. Over 1.5 million visitors use these iPads in Delta's terminals just this past year alone, and the result has been a double-digit increase in food and beverage revenue and the highest customer satisfaction scores of all participating airports. OTG Management is the hospitality company behind Delta's terminals. They've turned to TechServe to provide, configure, and install the world's largest deployment of iPads. It's a number that just keeps growing as they add new terminals. And TechServe really was the natural place to turn because they sell, support, personalize, configure, and manage massive iPad projects. From the Delta terminals to a school with 700 chef instructors to an operation that delivered personally configured iPads to 3,000 cable technicians. TechServe is able to do full lifecycle management for all your technology needs by providing the devices that you need, getting them up and running, teaching you and your staff how to effectively use them, and maintaining them so that they're working efficiently. TechServe also provides ongoing support so that if your enterprise has a problem, help is never further than a phone call away. So if you're considering adding iPads to your business, why not ensure your project's success with the most experienced partner? Now, here's what we'd like you to do. If your business is considering integrating iOS technology at your workplace, then contact TechServe today and receive a complimentary iPad deployment assessment. Visit TechServe.com/TWiET and TechServe will help you assess your current or future iPad needs and give you advice to make it a success. That's TechServe.com/TWiET. TechServe.com/TWiET. And we thank TechServe for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. We welcome back to the show a guest who made quite a few waves when he came on just a few weeks ago, Mr. Joe Habib from Wild Packets. Joe, for the folks who maybe didn't see the last time you were on, do you want to explain a little bit about what you do and what your company is?
All right. So work for Wild Packets, and we do packet acquisition, and we decode the packets and break them all out and let people really know what's happening on the network.
I like that. Again, I think we could just make that your slogan. We let people know what's happening on the network, which is what we're talking about with Application Performance Monitoring, APM. Now, really quickly, can you define what APM is? Because I know that it has changed throughout the years. People have different ideas of what it does, what it's supposed to do. What is your definition of APM?
So application performance management is really understanding what those applications are doing on the network, and then being able to take action on what they're doing.
I got it. So in other words, being able to look at your screen and saying, this is working, this is not, this is fast, this is slow, and then actually being able to do something about it, not just saying, well, yeah, I guess the network is slow, but giving you the data you need to actually make it not slow.
Correct. So I think in the early phases of application performance management, a lot of it was give me indications, right? So where we're trying to figure out red light, green light, are things bad, and then trying to take actions. But I think in the past, a lot of people would sit there and make guesses. And I think as we've seen this evolve and spending a lot of money into it, it's really trying to expand it beyond the guesswork of, do I need more bandwidth? Do I need to go ahead and allocate more servers? Is there actually something inherently wrong in the actual code that is causing the slowdown that would take place?
All right. So get me to the brass tacks here. If I'm an IT manager, why do I want an APM suite?
Well, the first reason is we're all there to service our customers. If you're an IT manager, you want to make sure that the applications you're providing are at the highest level that are servicing your customers. And that could be internal customers or external customers. So having that visibility and being able to react and also understand what's taking place on the network or what's happening at the application layer ensures that you're going to provide the highest quality of service to those customers.
Yeah. Chibert, let me throw to you really quickly. Joe brought up an interesting point, and that is that some APMs have been this red light, green light. Yes, the network's working. No, the network's not working. And there are a lot of tools that, unless you configure them really, really finely, that's pretty much all they give you. They tell you it's broken or it's working. We need more out of an APM, yes?
Yeah. One of my favorite analogy, I call it contextual vision, because you need to be able to look into your network in context. How well is this piece of your network working in relation to another piece? So a lot of the things when I start looking at performance management, it's not only just how well is the web server working, it's how well is the web server working in context with the backend SQL server to that website, because the two pieces have to go together. You can no longer look at a single device, a single application. It's the system that you need to look at. And that's one of the things that's really exciting about the changes in APM in the marketplace today.
Yeah. Well, Joe, why is it so difficult to do contextual vision? Why can't I see in most APM suites that forward-looking diagnostic of saying, well, if the web server is working but the database is down, it's not going to be quick? Or if both of those are working but I'm having congestion on the network switch, then I'm also going to see a degradation performance. Why is it so difficult to have those pieces combined into an easy to understand data stream that goes to the IT manager?
Well, I think a lot of products today have evolved in such a way that there's so many dependencies, and to get true vision into those dependencies, you really need to be able to watch all of those data points and then build a relationship about it. And intelligent learning really isn't there. And the time to set it up, usually as soon as you set it up for a particular application, that application has evolved and you've changed the way that the interaction between the application server and the web server works. So it makes it very difficult to really understand it. So with flexible solutions and looking at each segment separately, you can understand, is there a DNS dependency? Is there really focusing on the individual segments gives you that visibility of optimizing those segments separately.
Right. Curtis, I want to throw over to you because there's an interesting phenomenon here that deals with APM. And that is, for a lot of people, what an IT manager wants out of APM is not the same thing that an executive wants out of APM. An IT manager is looking to find out, where is the network slow? What can I fix? What can I replace? What do I need to upgrade? Where can I, as both Joe and Brian have pointed out, find those contextual relationships that I need to protect in order to make our service work properly? Versus what I see a lot when executives are using APM, and that is to be able to justify their expenditures, to say, we're up this amount of time, this percentage of network resources have been allocated for this, this goes down this a number of times. And so you could use the same tool, but extract two different data sets that seem to be at odds with one another.
Well, I would say that at one very solid level, the executive and the IT guy both want the same thing from APM. They want APM to make it so that the executive never has a reason to pick up the phone and call the IT guy. They go at it from a different direction. Now, you're right. The executive wants something that will allow them to say, because we've spent all of this money on our infrastructure, because we've spent all of this money on our physical plant, on our service providers, on our entire IT infrastructure and the people who keep it running, we have nothing that's going to get in the way of productivity and sales. We have the most incredible infrastructure ever, one that gives us a competitive advantage, one that makes us win over our competitors. Now, when you look at that from the IT perspective, it's exactly as you say. In order to make that happen, the IT group needs to know what's going on at every point and every segment in the infrastructure, so that they can not only optimize those pieces, they can get ahead of it. If one of those starts to degrade, they can go in and do the fix before the degradation becomes a problem that's noticeable to non-IT folks. So while it may sound like they're coming at it with different messages, in truth, this is one of those rare cases when the needs and the wants and interests of the executives and the IT folks are exactly aligned, they're just viewing it from different sides of that important line.
All right. Let's get a bit into the technology here. Joe, if I'm running, we always use our fanciful 10,000-seat enterprise network. If I'm running that network, what do I need? What needs to be installed? What equipment do I need to be activating? What resources do I have to have in order to do proper APM?
So I think a lot of it boils down to the environment and what approach are you taking from APM. There's something as simple as, in our place, putting packet capture devices are what we refer to as engines or distributed sniffers at each of those segments. So you have that visibility of what's taking place. But the problem is that that's not really a proactive way. I mean, you're capturing packets, you're looking at it, and you can have those sniffers alert and alarm you when you're taking these. But then you also need a way to see all of this from a higher level view. So you need some type of dashboard that is going to aggregate all of these data points, as we mentioned, so you can do some type of event correlation and understand what are the effects that are taking place on the network. Did you have a traffic spike? Was there a slow response time from a particular server on a segment that was taking place? So it's really just as you would have a multi-tiered architecture serving up an application, you almost need a multi-tiered philosophy to address these application performance and network. And also, I would say that APM and NPM, network performance management, really are starting to meld into a single in order to get the best bang for the buck. You're starting to see it as really starting to join forces and giving you that visibility. And that's really what we aim to provide that type of information.
Got it. Okay, so Brian, let me go over to you really quickly. When we're talking about APM and when we're talking about NPM, at Interop, again, I'm going to bring up Interop because that's our common framework. We have a certain way of building the network that allows us to monitor it massively. I mean, we've got taps everywhere. We've got aggregating vendors coming in to actually give us really, really solid logics, really solid data streams out of the individual switches on the show floor, on the off show floor, in the classrooms. But when you start dealing with a network that is much larger than a single convention center, that becomes more difficult. How do I get the same data points in order to feed my APM tools? Because it doesn't matter how sophisticated the APM tool is, if it's not getting proper data from all the different segments that it's supposed to be monitoring, it can't do its job.
Yeah, it's as you start growing, I ran into this a few times, especially on really big military networks. And the hassle is you start having to compartmentalize things. So far, a lot of the tools that I've been using don't scale up when you're starting to talk about 30, 40, 50,000 nodes really nicely. You start having to have aggregators and things like that in there. It's, you know, my old saying, you know, how do you eat an elephant? And the answer is one bite at a time. So you need to start setting up teams that are going to handle each section and have a team responsible for an aggregation zone. And once you have the aggregation zone, then you have the zone leaders talk about aggregating further up to regions, up to corporate. It's all about wrapping your head around it and making sure you take it one bite at a time, because large networks have this really bad tendency of growing too organically. And if you don't have a plan on breaking it up into manageable pieces, it starts getting out of hand really, really quickly.
Right. Joe, let me ask you this. What is the most difficult part about setting up an APM or an NPM? Chibert touched briefly about it by talking about how we need to contextualize the vision into your network. But what are the other challenges? If I'm that theoretical IT manager, I've got my 10,000-seat enterprise network. What are the things that I need to be watching for that are going to be difficult when I actually go to implement?
So I think one of the biggest things, and everybody always takes this approach, is where do I start? And if we take it in terms of segments, everybody will sit there and say, okay, if I'm going to try to tap and see every segment in that 10,000 enterprise that we've referred to, it becomes to be a lot of equipment. And to get that kind of visibility, it shell shocks a lot of people personally. So really, you start very simply. You look at what are the key components and what are the key arteries within your enterprise and your environment, and you focus on those. And once you've focused on those key enterprises, then you start optimizing from there on out. So I would say a lot of people have been focused on just let me put everything in the data center and that gives me visibility, but that almost comes as a negative thing, because you get so much data coming in, you can't focus on it. So focusing on key applications or focusing on key segments, like let's say you're a retail establishment and having pipes that are going to the stores, and just focusing on that, making sure that all your stores are working well. So taking that kind of approach, I think, really helps people out. And then growing this infrastructure, just like you have your IT infrastructure, so slowly adding and expanding out your measurement points and really looking at it as measurement points and figuring out where there is lack of measurement.
Fantastic. Now, when we come back, Joe is going to show us a demo of Wild Packet's approach to application performance management. But before that, let's take a break to talk about another sponsor of the Twilight Riot, and that's Citrix with GoToMeeting with HD Faces. Now, if you're in business, you already know this truth. You know that businesses need meetings. It's how we stay in touch. It's how we stay on the same page. It's how we grow our ideas. It's how we make sure that collaborators, coworkers, and clients are on the same page. But not all meetings can be planned in advance. Work emergencies have to be handled. Inspiration strikes at odd times. Unexpected opportunities present themselves. But with people working from different offices or on the go, it can be impossible if you're not using GoToMeeting with HD Faces. Be prepared. Sign up for GoToMeeting. It's the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate online whenever you need to, wherever you are. With GoToMeeting by Citrix, you can share screens to work together on documents, spreadsheets, and projects in real time. And turning on your webcam turns your meeting into a group HD video conference. It's just like meeting in person. You get to see the other person's face. You get to see if they're frowning, if they're smiling, if they have that raised eyebrow that tells you that they don't quite understand what you're trying to explain. It's all part of the experience of meeting with GoToMeeting. Now, Citrix understands that the meeting needs to be the focus of your time, not the tech. So aside from the really clear video, aside from the screen sharing, Citrix has put a lot of energy into making sure that it's easy to use GoToMeeting. You can launch it from any Mac, any PC, any smartphone or tablet. GoToMeeting lets you meet when you want, how you want, and on the device of your choice. Now, I'm not just a spokesperson for GoToMeeting. I actually use the service. My work has me meeting with literally hundreds of coworkers and colleagues each month. I used to jump in a plane every time I had to do that, and that meant that I spent most of my time in the air because that was the accepted way of getting face-to-face time. But I switched to GoToMeeting with HD Faces, and I haven't looked back. Not only did it cut my travel time per month in half, but it allowed me to have more interaction with the people that I needed to collaborate with the most. It saved my organization money, it saved me time, and it saved wear and tear on my sanity. I love GoToMeeting. It's easy to use, and with HD Faces, it really is just like meeting in person. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. For this special offer, visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code ENTERPRISE. Remember, use the promo code ENTERPRISE. But wait, there's more. As you know, GoToMeeting with HD Faces lets you meet face-to-face with your team no matter where in the world everyone is located. Well, now they want to know exactly where you're located. They want to know how you use GoToMeeting, and they want to know who you'd meet with. So they want you to tweet out your ideal GoToMeeting to them. Tweet them a picture of your answer using the hashtag WinEnterprise and at GoToMeeting for a chance to win an Apple gift card value at $300 towards any Apple hardware or accessory purchase in the Apple retail store or in the Apple online store, courtesy of Citrix. Remember, tweet them a picture of where in the world you would host your ideal GoToMeeting using the hashtag WinEnterprise and at GoToMeeting. The contest ends November 8th, and the winner will be announced in the November 11th episode of this show. The contest is only open to U.S. residents. For contest rules and regulations, visit inside.twit/contests. Apple is a registered trademark of Apple and is not a participant or sponsor of this promotion, but we are. Because GoToMeeting, meeting is believing, and we thank Citrix for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Let's get back to it. Joe, you have a treat for us. You want to break it out?
So I have a trace that has been taken from a specific customer issue where they were complaining about performance management. They had issues that had been ongoing for a number of times. In fact, a lot of the indications going into this trace, network management would say that there was enough bandwidth, the response times were good. They would go through and also look at it from a database side. This is a database type trace that we're going to be looking at, but the databases, all systems indicating and monitoring the database actually also indicated everything was fine as well. So we'll cut over to my laptop and I'll show you. So typically most people will sit here and they'll look at a screen that you're looking at, say network utilization is low, a couple of stations are talking and there's one particular protocol and everything appears to be fine. In this case, I'm going to use a different view that we have, which is called our compass view. And our compass view is designed to be an interactive view. And in terms, it could show me in terms of network utilization here, but I can also flip it to something where I see two-way latency. And when I go to two-way latency, what you see the total broken out by application versus network. And then you have the time over here indicating what the response time was for transactions that take place. So I can see as I mouse over that I had very high application latency time. The problem is that, okay, that's great. I had slow application response time, but I don't necessarily know what to do with it. So now we start to look and take this high-level data and visualize it a little bit more. So what you're looking at right now is our integrated expert. And, for example, if I highlight a particular expert event like slow server response time, I can tune that expert. So I can, right now, it's set for 150 milliseconds. I can do something where I set it for 3,000 milliseconds, and I can also change severity levels.
So basically, right now, you're telling the tool that you only want to see something that's, that took 3 seconds to respond.
Exactly. So we'll do a quick reprocessing of the data. And now you start to see all of my transactions. In fact, I have a column over here that I've enabled, which is called worst response time, and I've sorted by that column. So you can see we're seeing responses from 6 seconds all the way up to 2 minutes. And that's what actually took place in this trace. So again, okay, yes, we've got a problem, but now what specifically is the problem? So by double-clicking on one of these flows, this will take me into the visual expert, and I've got a timing element which is going to break this down visually for 1 second. Now, we all hopefully have an idea how TCP works. TCP works as I send a packet, that packet gets acknowledged. Now, if that packet doesn't get acknowledged, typically we see a retransmission on the network. Now, applications work similar. So if we look here, we can see this is the request, and this is the acknowledgement of that packet. We send a payload length of 0 because basically we don't want to retransmit that packet. And we sit there and we wait for 2 minutes before there's actual data where we see 2 minutes and 28 seconds. So again, this is visually what's happening on the network. The client does a request. The network acknowledges it, or the receiver acknowledges it right away. But he tells the server, as the server's still processing, we're going to sit there and wait. So the next part that we're going to sit there and look at is we know that at packet 160, that's where the request was that caused this 2 minutes and 28 seconds. And a lot of people will sit there and go, okay, well, that's great. You've told me that we have an application issue. You've told me that, you know, there's 2 minutes and 26 seconds here. Now, the big question becomes is what was actually sent at packet 160 or that took 2 minutes and 28 seconds. So if we come over here to our payload, we can mouse over our payload. And 160 is actually the select statement, in this case, that took the time. So with this information, you know what the network was doing. You know what took the time to go ahead and give that response. And now you can take this information to your database team and stop the finger pointing. Because in many cases, what we would see here is they would say, okay, well, using the peer map, all of these guys are talking to one particular station. Maybe he can't handle it. Maybe we need to add another database server. Well, if I added another database server, that necessarily wouldn't solve the problem in this case, but optimizing the query may. So we use this information to go ahead and figure out how the network is working and then visualizing that data as well.
Chibert, I know you've played a lot with APMs and NPMs. This strikes me as something that, they all have the ability to do, right? I mean, they can all drill down in their packets.
Well, yeah. That's a hard one to answer because APM, there's a lot of people that are claiming to be an APM, and there are lots and lots of different flavors. What Joe's demonstrating here, though, is something that allows you to get into some very, very fine detail. And while a lot of the other so-called APMs go out and give you the 10,000-foot view, a lot of them will probably stop right around, well, your database is really slow.
Yes.
They don't give you that one last step. And that's kind of a useful tool because being able to tell while maybe you have really badly formatted queries or your query language is old and maybe you need to be taking advantage of some stored procedures on that SQL database, that's pretty cool trick.
Right. Curtis, let me go over to you because I think, again, this is one of the reasons why I like performance suites, something like OmniPeak, because this is the kind of evidence I would need to go to my executive, to go to my CTO, to go to my CIO and say, look, it's not the hardware. There's nothing wrong with the network. this packet shows you that the query is malformed, that the query is taking way too long, that the work needs to be done on the programming side rather than on the hardware side. Without this kind of information, without this kind of detailed analysis of the traffic on the network, that's not an easy sell to an executive, right? It's hard to tell them that, yeah, we can't just buy something and make this go away.
Well, buying something to make it go away is always going to be popular because it's the easiest thing to do. The other thing that becomes very difficult is overcoming politics. You know, let's admit it. Organizations, businesses, enterprises are political structures. And therefore, if the infrastructure people have the ear of the right executives, it's always going to be a software problem. If, on the other hand, the database administrators have the ear of those same executives, then everything is going to boil down to a hardware issue. Having the data from something like this allows you to, at least mostly, be able to overcome the political issues. It becomes much more difficult for the political players to steamroller their opposition if there is hard data standing in their way. The key for all of this, and the key skill for an IT professional, is to be able to take the data from a program like this, from a suite like this, and turn it into English. Because the thing that you can't depend on is putting down a 75-page thick report filled with charts and various types of output from a program like this and have the executive understand it. If you can take that critical data and say, here's the problem, it's because of this other problem, then you can win. If you don't understand it well enough to put it into simple English, then you need to dig deeper into the application. And that's where the real strength of a deep dive application can come into play.
Joe, I love that. I like that that explanation of why you need the deep dive application. Let's go back into the trace. So you showed me the process of determining exactly what's going on in my network. I found an application spike. I know, okay, I waited way too long for this particular query. I was able to go back into the data stream, find the packet that caused that abnormal wait state, and then actually look at the payload to figure out, well, what was it that caused my database to choke? But is that the most common scenario? What other scenarios am I going to find when I'm using APM?
So a lot of it has to do with different applications that are running within the environment. So, you know, we looked at one tier of a multi-tiered application. You know, typically people will start by looking at the edge and measuring user response for a particular website. And when you sit there and you look at that user response for the website, yes, you can say that the website is slow for that particular user, but there's so much that happens beyond just that website. There's the application servers, there's the database servers, and really we had tracked it down in this case. I don't have the preliminary traces here, but to this, the one segment where we were seeing these slow responses. So other things that may take place is also scenarios we've been in where they say that we've got five servers. We've got a server farm. And what you see is the load tends to go to one box. So load balancing isn't happening effectively as well. So there's certain things that you can tell by looking at the packetized data that's coming back and forth.
Well, that's what we have in this trace, right? We've got too much load going to one box?
No, actually, we have a query problem that's happening
in this
box.
Oh, that's right, right. Well, so, what was the screen that showed all the load on a particular box?
Right, so that particular view was the peer map, and what it was showing is showing all of the stations that were connecting to it. And we use this view to kind of give you an idea. Bigger dots basically mean more data. Thicker lines mean more data. Different colored lines indicate the type of traffic that's going there. In this particular case, there's one server, which is the main SQL server that all of these boxes are connecting to. Now, at the beginning, when we looked at the actual utilization, the utilization for this trace was low. So it's not an actual utilization, and by looking at the number of connections, it may not be necessarily a connection, a number of connections issue. We narrowed it down to a specific select statement that was hanging or at least coming back to the 2 minutes and 29 seconds. And in fact, this is where really understanding what the SLA is in the environment and understanding how fast should a query be? What should be the longest time for a particular query, and then kind of measuring the environment and finding queries that fall out of that space. Now, this is just from a database perspective. We could look at it from a web-based perspective. And if we went to a particular website, what you might see is a particular JPEG that would be taking longer to load. Or maybe it was going to a third-party referrer, like maybe cloud services, and you were downloading it that way, and it wasn't cached because it wasn't coming straight from the application server. So a lot of this is understanding the environment, being able to say, the data came from here, what's the referring source, and what took the amount of time for it to come in.
Okay. I know that from the end user perspective, the difference between a misformatted SQL query and an overloaded server, a server that's serving out to too many clients, a server that is, for some reason, doesn't have its load balancing set up properly, it's the same. So the end user experience is going to be the same, which is just slow response. But again, that's why you need this APM, so that you can actually go in and say, no, it is because the load balancing has been set up improperly, or it is because it's a bad query, or it is because, the database server is slow. Do you have anything in the tool there that you could show us? So, some key features that you should be looking at when you're actually trying to backtrack a problem.
So one of the things that we have is our Application Performance Index, and this is called AppDex, and this actually measures user response time. But again, it's at the point that you're taking the measurement, and it's the pretty dashboard gauges that measure what is the user experience, and it's a tunable threshold also that you can set. And based on that, that gives you an idea of where to drill down. I kind of did a big leap from, starting at a very high level all the way down to the specific cause of what would be that specific issue. So these gauges will look at if you went to a website and that website seemed to, you set a threshold that we want all of our query responses to be within 3 seconds. If it took longer than 3 seconds, you would actually show a frustrated user on the screen, and then you could drill down to what was the request that user was making that was frustrating him at the time.
Got it. Okay, so Joe, I want to get real gritty here for a second. We love our chat room, and sometimes they like to throw a couple of truths at us. We've got Max1234 in the chat room, who is essentially saying, look, this is a sales pitch. We can do all this stuff with free software. We don't need to buy an expensive tool to be able to do APM. What would you say that a formal solution, an actual bot solution, a supported solution, can give us over a free tool? Because I know I could look at logs, right? And if I look hard enough and I know what I'm looking for, I can line up my SQL database log. I can line up my my router logs and pretty much figure out the same.
Right. So I think one of the biggest things, and it comes down to time, right? How much time are you going to take to deploy that type of solution? There's a lot of open source solutions out there that will show you to the level I will. They may not do the visualizations. You might decide you don't need the visualizations, but you're going to have to find a way of extracting out that data. You could have millions and millions of packets that are following through your network. You could have logs and logs that are going through your network, and trying to understand or do some type of correlation really becomes the challenge. So being able to visualize that data, a lot of the open source and a lot of the freeware stuff that you'll see out there doesn't visualize the data very well, or doesn't handle large data sets very well. So that's really the big challenge out there with some of the freeware or open source things. Now, the beauty of it is you have the code. So if you want to build things on top of it, absolutely, you can do that. And that's really the difference between buy or build your own.
Right. Chibert, let me throw that over to you, because both of us have, we've played a lot with the build your own because, it's cheaper. It's more fun for us on the geek side. But I think Joe makes a very valid point, which is how much money is your time worth? As an IT manager, as a person who's tasked with protecting that 10,000-seat enterprise network, can you spend all your time looking at logs, or do you want to actually spend money on a tool that will do the grunt work for you, and then you can just drill down? Tell me, in your experience, because you have way more experience building these networks than I, Is that line clear? Do you know when a project moves from fun to now it needs to be productive?
I don't know. I've been trying to find that line for decades now. But yeah, it's one of the things I tell my new engineers is like, I'm sorry, guys. I don't care how big your ego is. If you're going to blow an entire day pounding your head against the desk, trying to find a stupid little problem that you could have solved by calling the tech support line, you've just wasted a heck of a lot of my money. I think the same thing kind of goes for tools. You know, free tools aren't free. You know, sure, we can do the same things, but can we do it as quickly? Can we do it as efficiently? Sometimes spending, you know, maybe $1,000 to $2,000 on a good tool can save you a lot of money, because take a good hard look at how much that engineer costs you on an hourly basis and then justify that against, you know, how much that tool costs. Sometimes a tool is much, much more cost effective, especially when trying to look in the old proverbial forest from the trees problem.
Yeah. Curtis, again, I'm going to ask you to take an enterprise view of this. And I know this might be an impossible question to answer, but do you think that's a sellable point in the enterprise to a CTO, to a CIO, to say, look, we know we could design our own tool. We know we could just look at logs. But in the long run, if I'm looking at my ROI in 1 year, 2 years, how expensive are your engineers? How expensive are our salaries? Is this what you want us to be doing with our time? Do executives get that? I mean, is that something I can go to a board meeting and say, look, we need to spend X amount of money on this tool. We know that there are free alternatives, but we believe this is the one that we need because we don't want our engineers digging through log files.
Oh, I don't think that's a terribly difficult argument to win at all. First of all, I think most executives are entirely thrilled when someone in a department like IT can come in and say, we have a solution and we want to buy it rather than build it. Most executives have a very good understanding of just how expensive it is when they start to build essentially anything. So if something that can do the job can be bought, they're on board from the beginning. The idea that you're going to use a commercial product rather than a free and open source one is also one that has traditionally been a relatively easy sell. It's interesting. We usually have this kind of discussion from the other side. What does it take to convince executives that it's okay to use free or open source software? Well, IT guys and girls, to give the both genders their due, have been making the argument in favor of free and open source for so long. Sometimes it's nice to settle back down and say, you know what? The way to go is traditional commercial software. It does the job. It does the job better. It does the job faster. And we're not going to have to waste a lot of our internal resources in getting it to make a difference for our organization. Those are arguments that just about any enterprise exec is going to accept, and really accept without too much difficulty. If you get a big pushback, it means someone's being a contrarian, and that's a political question you've got to deal with outside the IT realm.
Right, right. Yeah, I really don't want to get into a debate of paid versus free, because we know that there are benefits to both. I think any IT professional worth his salt plays with all the different applications, plays with everything out there that might potentially solve his problems. And you just are going to choose the best one for you, the one that meets your cost restrictions, the one that meets your time restrictions. And for some, that's free. And for some, that's paid. Joe, I want to go back to you. We had a comment in the chat room. I'm sorry, it scrolled past, so I'm not sure who said it. But he wanted to know if a tool like OmniPeak allows me to do a historical warehousing of my data so that I can go back and, say, compare problems. Look at a problem that I'm having now versus one that I had 3 years ago to see if, wow, am I having the same problem on different hardware? Is this a deeper thing than just bad SQL queries? Is this a different thing than just a bad load balancer?
Right. So what we're looking at is really one component of our products, and that's really the ending result, the OmniPeak product itself. Typically, you know, we call it the Lego blocks of packet analysis, where you start out with a protocol analyzer. This is the standalone portion. Then you actually have on top of this distributed engines, and those distributed engines can feed up to a longer term reporting server, which is our watchpoint box. Now, basically, what that watchpoint does is it gives you the historical view so you can do those comparisons and those baseline benchmarks so you can figure out what's changed in the environment. Also, you can drill down straight from that high-level view all the way down to the packets view. So if you had your experts tuned for, let's say, a slow SQL response time of 3 minutes, it would actually show you indications within the UI, and you can say, give me the packets during that time to get to the level that I did. Now, because of our short time, I jumped us straight to really understanding, because a lot of products out there will show you red light, green light. And I think the hard part that many people have in environments is they take that red light, green light information, they start guessing at solutions or how to solve those problems. We always take the approach that once you have the packets don't lie, and you can tell specifically what's happening within your environment. So you can take action to figure out what's happening. But again, this is the list price just for a simple analysis that you're looking at right here is about $5,000. So, I mean, we're not talking, you know, $100,000 to get to this level of detail.
Right, right. I do want to make another point before we start our close-up, and that is when you look at a paid tool like OmniPeak, it also, and if Jason will switch to my product camera, it allows me to do more than just APM. I mean, this same tool is the tool that we used last time when we were looking at actually breaking down and tapping 802.11 AC and 802.11 and wireless. And it allows me to use tools like this. This is their Omni Wi-Fi to be able to do a packet capture, a trace capture out of the air. When you have these really nice built solutions, they often give you that single pane of glass. I think more than anything else, because again, Chibert, back me up on this. I love playing with free, but I love even more having one tool or maybe one or two tools that do everything. Has that been your experience?
Well, there's also having tools that you can just shove in your bag. I mean, you know, I've got different dongles that I stick in my bag so that if I get shanghaied into something at the last minute, I've got the tools with me. So small and portable has a lot to, you know, go for it also. But yeah, I like pay tools because they tend to take a lot of the labor out of the equation. I'm just sometimes not always willing to go and blow that kind of money. So it depends on your situation. It's, you know, how well does it work? Each person's going to have to look at it for themselves.
Yeah. Joe, I want to give you the last word here. Again, let's go back to our fictitious IT person running that 10,000 seat network. What are the things that he should know about APM? And you know, don't speak about OmniPeak and Wild Packets, right, but specifically about any APM. What are the things that he's going to want to look for when building or buying his solution?
Well, I think the key is that, first of all, you get that high-level view of action that's taking place. But not only visibility into what's taking place, but getting you down to what is the root cause and what caused that specific issue. Because just having things that tell me things are not right and telling me my service levels aren't being met isn't enough to help me resolve those issues and helps the environment become better. So no matter what product it is, always assess your workflow and always look at the workflow within the organization of how you work with the data. Because if you understand or if the product works within your workflow, it's going to get used by your employees and it's going to help make the environment a lot better. And that's really the key.
I like that. That's the key. And the packets don't lie. Well, you've done it. You've used up another hour listening to the best dang enterprise podcast this side of the Mississippi run by a Catholic priest in Petaluma, California. And we have to get really specific. But you know what? I do want to call out to my panelists for making this show possible. First of all, again, to my good friend, Mr. Brian Chi. Brian, I know you've got a lot of things on the iron right now. You're working with Maker. You're working with a lot of gadgets. You're going to be coming over here in December. Tell the Twiet Riot where they can find you.
Well, you can find me by following ADVNetLab, ADVNETLAB. That's my Twitter handle. Sorry, it stands for Advanced Network Laboratory. You're also eventually going to start being able to follow me on the IETF forums. That's kind of a little tasty tidbit that I'm going to be dealing with some IETF standards.
Oh, boy. Now we'll never hear the end of it.
Yeah, ought to be interesting. And I'm actually going to be doing a lot more work with Ixia Corporation, and that's why I was in Calabasas, California. So much to say in the future as the memorandum of agreement gets hammered out.
All right. Well, thanks for that teaser. Now I have to go poke you offline to figure out exactly what that's all about. I know there's probably not much you can say publicly, but I have ways of making you talk. Speaking of ways of making me talk, let's go over to my other good friend from the right coast, Curtis Franklin from Enterprise Efficiency. Curtis, it's always a joy to have you on, and I love the hat. Tell me, tell us, tell our listeners, where can they find you? What's going on E2 Radio?
Thanks, Padre. Well, this is certainly always one of the highlights of my week. Another highlight this week is going to be Friday at a special time, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We've got a CIO interview coming up on E2 Radio. November is going to be a big month of CIO interviews. Hope everyone will join us for those. Check at enterpriseefficiency.com for our full E2 Radio schedule. And hey, feel free to find one of my articles there. Join the conversation around it. I'd love to see your voice in the conversation.
Yes, of course. We love that voice. And Joe, over to you. What's going on? I mean, thank you again for coming in. It is always a pleasure to talk to you, be it at Interop or here on the show. You show us some really cool tools, and you just give us the knowledge about, you know, watching what's happening on your network. We're going to have you back again, but until then, where should they find you? Where should they find Wild Packets? What should they be looking for?
So we've actually just released a downloadable version within CNET and a lot of the other download sites, and even within our own site, where you can download and get a copy of the software that'll run for a period of time from the time of installing. Also on our website, we have network roundtable workshops, and we're at Cisco Live and CBIT and a lot of the other major trade shows out there. So stop by and get an eval copy, check out our product, and say hi.
Say hi. I love that. Now, before we go, we do want to say thank you to our last sponsor, one of our very first sponsors. Actually, they've been with us forever. And it's a good thing, too, because, well, they've been in the brick house forever. When we built this brick house, when Leo commissioned this wonderful studio, he decided that we were going to dog food. We were going to do the thing that we were telling all our listeners to do, and that is put everything in the cloud. We do all our messaging in the cloud, all our email, all our document servers, all our scheduling, all of our calendaring is done in the cloud. So when Russell, our IT guy, came to us and told us that we could get a full-featured phone system without all that bulky PBX hardware in the basement, well, it was a no-brainer. We love RingCentral. There are zero startup costs, and you don't have to worry about running wires and getting a dedicated person to take care of your stuff, your phones. It's all contained within an easy-to-understand web interface. Our producers get their voicemail through their email, and we can even get all our fax messages right on our smartphones. RingCentral also features call functioning. You get to program the order of devices that will ring when someone calls your number. Like, for example, it'll call your desk phone and then your smartphone so that you never miss an important business opportunity again. You can even choose the amount of rings before the call goes to the next device. RingCentral offers all-inclusive pricing as low as $20 per month per user. And you can start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And they have a special offer for my listeners. When you buy one desk phone, you get a second phone free. That's gratis for up to 20 phones. So call this number designated for my listeners, 800-543-9980. That's 800-543-9980. Once again, just for the stream, 800-543-9980. Or you can go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. That's ringcentral.com, promo code TWIT. And we thank RingCentral for their support of this week in enterprise tech. Now, I've already said goodbye to our panelists. Now, thanks to you, all the people who watch the show, who download it, who get it in every format they want in order to get all the enterprise goodness each and every single week. And so I want to do something for you. What I want to do is I want to give you a page, maybe someplace where you could go to find all the different ways to get every episode automatically delivered on your device of choice. And bam, here it is. It's twit.tv/twite. If you go there, you'll find a drop-down menu that will give you all the different methods for getting every episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech automatically downloaded to your iPad, your iPhone, your Android phone or tablet, your Zombie Zune, your device of choice, and we give it to you because we love you. Also, we want you to go ahead and check out our YouTube page. You can find us at youtube.com/twite. There you'll find not just all of our episodes, but also the individual segments. Stuff My IT Guy Says, Pro Gear, Pro Tip, everything that we put out there to help you learn about your craft. Well, you can watch just that. It's one of the things that we do for the Twiet Riot. Also, follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/PadreSJ. If you follow me, you'll be able to find out what we're doing each week in advance of the show. And that's the number one way to suggest topics for future episodes. I'd say a good 20% of the topics for Twiet we have pulled straight from my Twitter feed. It's one of the things that we do to make sure that the show reflects what you want to see. Also, did you know that we do this show live? That's right, live. Every Monday at noon Pacific time, we're here at live.twit.tv. If you join us early, you'll be able to see how the sausage is made. You'll see the pre-show, the post-show, the bloopers, all the things that don't go into the finished product. And let me tell you, sometimes it is worth seeing, like today when I just blooped up an ad. Also, you can find us in the chat room. That's right. Twit still runs an incredibly active chat room. I'd say probably the most active chat room in the world at irc.twit.tv. As long as you're going to watch live, why not jump in there? And you'll see that I pull questions out of chat. Finally, I want to remind everyone that it's survey time. That's right. We here at Twit are trying to find out how you consume our shows, what you want to see, and when you want to see it. So if you go to twit.tv/survey, you'll be able to give us the information we need to keep providing you with the best content that we can. Big thanks to everyone here in the Brick House who has made the show possible, especially to my super producer, Karsten, and to Jason Howell who, Jason, I heard that you might have this fledgling show. You have an idea for a show that's going to be talking about most things Android?
Yeah, it's all about Android. It's funny, you always dance around it, but the name is all about Android,
it's
Father.
Weird. It's weird, I know. I have bad memory.
Which tomorrow is going to be a pretty interesting episode, because if you've been following Android, Nexus 5, the next Nexus device was announced, so it was KitKat details. And I want to show you a little something. You might not expect this from me.
See this
Check it out. So I'm going to turn it on. I'm going to swipe. Wait a minute. Is that the Play Store?
What?
What's going on here?
This is wait. What am I seeing right now?
This is a total knockoff iPhone running Android. Also have one for the Lumia. I'm telling you, they did a really good job with these. It's pretty impressive. Anyways, we're going to show these off.
So in other words, Windows Phone, iOS, it's all Android. So I guess the slogan is now Android tastes like chicken.
It can be whatever you want. That's the point, right? Android can be whatever you want.
And so you can find Android at what?
Yeah,
all about Android?
twit.tv/AAA.
Tuesdays. Come find us. Tuesdays. I'm Father Robert Ballas here, and I'm reminding you, want to know what's going on in the enterprise? Just keep twiet.